Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Nine to Side podcast, where we chat with super amazing and inspirational people who pounded the pavement before and after their nine to fives to get their side hustles off the ground. After listening to the interviews with these amazing guests, you'll walk away with a refreshed pep in your step and a newfound motivation to make your side hustle a reality. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 17 of season 2. I'm trying to think of the word that describes me today, and I have to say there's three words that I continuously say over and over in my head. It's like a soundtrack. I don't know if you guys have this, but it's, I'm so tired. I'm always so tired. It's almost just like this, this thing that rolls around in my head, this phrase. And sometimes I just say it to myself. Sometimes I say it out loud, but so much to the point where like my kids, I'll be like, I'm so, and they're like, we know, tired. And I'm like, oh, I must say it like a lot. It's just this like subconscious track because I am always tired. I'm always tired. And I don't know, maybe it's from being a mom and having 5 million things going on. And yes, I always burn the candle at both ends. So it's my own fault. And I don't know why I do that to myself. I continue to do it to myself and go to sleep way too late, but I'm always tired. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to that. And I think working from home has made things better. And everybody's like, yes, things are more flexible and you have the ability to fit more things in. But it almost just makes like the day this one long, continuous, like, I don't know, block of just work, different kinds of work. So you start your day job, you do your day job, and then your day job ends, and then you get into your night job, which is like the kids stuff and like putting the kids to bed. So it feels like by the time you get around to like 9 or 10 o'clock is like by the time you get to kind of relax and have any time to yourself. So some people are, I don't know, like, why don't you go to bed right at 9 o'clock? And I'm like, absolutely not. I'm like, I'm going to stay up and have some forced like me time. Even if it means my eyes are closing, I'm like, damn it, I'm going to stay awake and make myself watch TV because that's my time to be by myself or with my husband or whatever before I start the whole cycle again. So anyway, I'm always tired. I don't know if anybody else can relate, but I am always tired. And my next guest, I love kind of her description in her bio because she talks about she's also a mother, military wife, and had her own agency. And she just talks about being burnt out. And she uses the word term burnt out, extra crispy, which I love because I'm like, oh my God, I can so relate to that. Burnt out, extra crispy. Yes, that is exactly what I am. So she decided to change all that and kind of reevaluate her life and pivot using the skills that she had. And you can listen to the episode. She talks about how she got into what she's doing, but she's a marketing strategist and educator. And she currently helps small and micro-sized businesses basically scale their marketing and attract ideal clients and then helps them convert those clients faster and keep them longer. But she did that whole business by leveraging the skills that she had in her past and is no longer feeling burnt out like she did before. And I think she is great. Her name is Mickey Anderson. I love her name too. She's got a super cool name. And this is my interview with her, Mickey Anderson.
Thanks for joining. Before we get started, because I want to get into your background and a little bit about who you are, tell us your name and the name of your business and whether it is truly a side hustle, still a side hustle, or whether you've transitioned it into a full-time business.
My name is Mickey Anderson. I'm a marketing strategist and educator, and my business is Mickey Anderson. It's self-named, and it is now a full-time gig. It did start off as a side hustle, and now it's my whole spiel.
That's awesome. So cool. All right. So let's back up now and tell me a little bit about your background, and then we'll kind of get into how you started this and whether it did basically start as a side hustle before you transitioned it into a full-time career. But give us a little background on you and your career background.
My career background is a little bit ridiculous, and I am one of those people who just could not figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Since I was a teenager, I had no idea. I thought I was going to be a Zamboni driver. for hockey.
Okay, I don't even know what a Zamboni driver is. So what is that?
The person who cleans the ice after hockey games. I was a weird kid. But yeah, I couldn't figure out anything. And just to like please people, I would write that on those career sheets in high school to make people stop. Round and about, went to university, studied something that I wasn't interested in, but was good in. So I got a degree.
What'd you
finished.
Study?
I studied modern languages and international affairs.
Oh, wow. It all sounds good.
So I was a competitive swimmer, and so I stayed in athletics as my full-time gig for a really long time because I couldn't figure out what to do afterwards. It was a safe space. And naturally, like many athletes, became a personal trainer, worked in gyms, managed gyms. I was good at it. Was it my passion? No. When I discovered my passion, it was while I was working in the gym, helping our contractors, our physiotherapists, our massage therapists, our nutritionists, build their business. So building their website, coming up with their pitches, doing their marketing, I fell in love with helping them grow their businesses and immediately knew this is the thing. So what did I do? Once again, I did the thing that everyone tells you you should do, but felt terrible for me. I started a marketing agency. And it, much like I'm sure you can relate to, it definitely killed my soul a little bit. It looked great on paper. It was all of the things that everyone tells you you should do when you're into marketing, and I hated it. And what ended up happening is I got pregnant, married, and came out of maternity leave so burnt out, I was like extra crispy. I couldn't think straight. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I needed a change. And so I had a bunch of side hustles going on, as well as the agency, and I just stopped it all. I had to take a break and take a breather and really kind of clean slate myself and figure out what I was going to do. And so I held on to one job that would pay the bills while I built my side business.
And what was that one job you were holding on to? Was it the agency?
I was working for a gym while I just clean slated and went right into marketing consulting. So no longer hiring people, no longer doing all of the big projects, but really just consulting on business growth with businesses. And over time and slowly but surely that built up and built up, I was able to leave the job at the gym and it's now my full-time spiel.
That's great. So, okay. So now in true fashion, when I talk to these people, that all sounds like an easy path. Not easy. Obviously it wasn't, but I want to break down some of the steps because for people who are listening, that all I'm sure did not happen as easily as it sounds like the transitions. Like what was the first step that you took? Because building an agency, that's getting clients, right? I wanted to ask you going back to you kind of helping at the gym people with their marketing strategy. Did you just realize you had a knack for it? You did. And you were just like, oh, I'm interested in this. Somebody asked you, or did you volunteer yourself? Like, how did you realize that was something you were good at?
It was part of my role, but it was one that I had never done before in a professional sense. And I kind of had a safe place to test and to play. And so it was part of my job description. I had to help these people set up their businesses. But what I found was I could take what they gave me and help make it better. Really naturally and easily. I saw opportunities. I saw potential. I also could see what hadn't been working in the past and how to fix it. And that kind of thought process, looking through what happened, what the strategy should be, and then how we can pivot and move forward to take hold of opportunities was my thing.
And that just you were like, when you realized, you were like, I have a knack for this. I can kind of see,
yes,
got it. And yes, you were like, this is it. Okay.
Well, it was when my clients started seeing real results. When the proof started happening, it was like, I loved the process. It was lots of fun. But when they were actually getting the results we wanted, that's when I was like, oh, okay, I need to lean into this. This is amazing.
What do you think made you so good at it? Was it like, were you doing market research? Or was it like you could just see things kind of like trends and gaps in the marketplace, like that other people couldn't see naturally? You just kind of had a gift for that.
I think it was a combination of things. I think first and foremost, I had helped grow these gyms that I worked for before. And so I had done some of the hard work of seeing what works and what doesn't work. And I had a general sense of what you needed to know about clients. So, you know, the basics. But what I found was the real difference maker is I can understand people really well. I actually went on and started doing my master's of counseling psychology because I love psychology and people so much. And understanding the drivers and motivators, the reasons why people behave or take action or don't take action, what actually matters to them ultimately and what doesn't. And being able to use that to create real relationships and build your business on real relationships was a game changer. That was my thing. They had tried different tactics of social media, websites, all of these other pieces. But when you connect it to the actual human that you're trying to work with, that's when everything changes.
I feel like that resonates so much with me because I also am very interested in the psychology of people, connecting with people. And I feel like if you can hone in on like what drives people, what makes people tick, that kind of thing, it's like you can do all the things they tell you to do on social media. And I feel like you really just drove it home. That's the key. So many people kind of go through the motions. They're like, I put up, I got these followers, I did this, but it's just sort of checking the boxes where it's not really connecting to what people are feeling and what they want. And so fast forwarding to you wanting to start your own consulting firm, what's the first thing that you did when you were like, okay, I'm going to start my marketing consulting firm? What was the very first thing that you decided to do? Walk me through some of those steps.
I'm in a military family. My husband is deployed anywhere from 200 to 300 days of the year. So I'm a solo parent most of the time, trying to grow a business and survive with the stresses of doing it by yourself amidst a pandemic and him with a kind of dangerous job. So there was a lot of stress and a lot of things going on. The first thing that I did was I started asking for help at home. And it sounds so counterintuitive, but there are so many things that we do at home that take up space and time that can be delegated. You can ask for help and get those off your plate. So you can spend, even if it's a half an hour more per day, working on the thing you need to be working on, it adds up. And so I asked for help with childcare. I asked for help with meals and cooking from family. I asked for help wherever I possibly could. And I spent that time interviewing potential clients. I made phone calls. I connected the dots with people from the gym. I reached out to my personal network. It was all offline. None of this was hitting up social media or coming up with a fancy website. It was talking to real people. And so I'd get on the phone with these people and say, okay, if you could look forward 3 years from now, where would you like your business to be? What do you think is holding you back in your business? What would you love to see happen moving forward? And then is there a way that we can make this happen? That's it.
That was like the first thing you're doing, you're just calling. You didn't have a website. It wasn't an official business. You're just making calls, talking to people about what their ideal scenario would be for their business 3 years from now. What did you get from those calls?
And I got my first big clients. And if I've learned anything, it's become obsessed with your ideal clients. Obsessed with their surface level problems, with the root problems, with their desires, their needs, their wants, their dreams, all of it. And it will be so hard not to succeed. But if you waste time on the tactics and the marketing and the media, you're missing the point. And so I became innately obsessed with my ideal clients and just did everything I could to deliver value, let them know I was thinking of them, solve problems for them, and make it almost hard to not work with me.
Right.
Because I knew so much. And so I got my first couple of clients and then I asked for referrals and I delivered value and I made it so hard for them to leave that they stayed with me forever. I still have some of them now. And just through building that network and delivering value, people talk. And that's how I got my first couple of clients. Now, getting your first few clients is different from getting your next few clients and then your 100th client and your 1,000th client. But for those first core clients, it was all about relationship building.
That's so smart. And I think that for anyone that's listening, because a lot of people will be like, I want to start a marketing consulting business. I'm going to put out like $200 to build a website. I'm going to make sure I have my business cards. I'm going to do all that. But you didn't do any of that. You just called, you made connections, you networked first, and you actually got people to commit and pay, which is really smart before you actually went ahead and spent any money on anything else. So what are they paying for and how do you structure your deal? Like what were you pitching to them and how did you figure out how to do that?
Well, at the time, like most people when they're first starting their business, I didn't have like specific offers, right? I didn't have like programs or packages set up yet. It was the beginning and it was actually worked out perfectly because I got to test and try. Had I made my business card and my tagline and my message and my website, I would have had to change it all three times over. Huge waste of time and money. Mm-hmm. And so instead, I used it as a testing opportunity. And I'm not saying you need to discount your prices, but I didn't charge full price for my first few clients because I needed to test run. I needed to get the opportunity to show them that I could get them results, get their buy-in, and move forward. And so the way that I did it was very custom. That's not how I recommend you scale. But when you're getting your first few clients, test your offers. You do not have a proven offer until you've sold it and worked it and it produced the results you want. So I offered coaching when I'm on calls. I offered consulting. I did audits of websites and marketing. I went in and looked at their operations and evaluated where they were losing time or money. I looked at their offers and helped them update their offers, increase their prices, maximize revenue in a whole bunch of different ways until I was able to narrow down the core pieces that pretty much everyone needs. And I created my signature offer based off of that.
I definitely want to hear what your signature, what you kind of honed in as your signature package. But when you were first targeting clients, was there a specific client that you were like, I know I can help, I've got it? Was it like the health and fitness industry? Because you had done that?
Yeah, I started in health and wellness, and then eventually I opened up to different industries. So now I work, I do engineering, SAS, I do product marketing, I do pretty much anything in any industry, events, national associations, nonprofits, all that stuff. But I started with a very target niche, and it was small business owners who were service providers in the health and wellness industry doing all their stuff themselves.
And was it kind of like you knew what you had done for the gym you had worked for? So it was kind of, I don't want to say rinse and repeat, but you knew what worked for them. So you could kind of take that model and then you knew you would have
success.
And
I never stopped investing in myself and my education either. That's the other thing. So the second I started generating revenue, I committed a percentage of it to my own education. Right. And so eventually I did get my certifications. I am a certified marketing strategist. I did go into different programs and go back to school and do all of these things over time to really master my craft. But I took my time to make sure that I was going in the right direction along the way.
Do you think that's important for people? Because I've talked to coaches and different people have their business, consultants and so forth. Do you think it's important for people to take you seriously or buy in to have certain degrees? Like you started, you didn't have those. It was just you're going off your reputation and relationships and referrals.
I think it depends on the reason why you're doing it. If you're doing it for social proof, that's a waste of money. If it's not allowing you to master your craft better, it's not a great investment. And so the way that I look at it is it's like a bonus that it helps. Some clients really care about that stuff. Some don't. Some want to see that you've done it with other clients, and that matters more than the degree. And so instead of focusing on building up my, you know, repertoire of certifications, I did case studies. And so I collected the data from every client that I had, where they started, how much revenue they were making, what their products were. And I just built like a book basically for each client so that I could know the numbers and build case studies around these people so I could prove to anyone, no, no, what I do works.
Right. Did you work with a business coach? Because a lot of people who are building their own businesses don't necessarily know the steps to take or how to kind of formalize things. Like if you do come up with a, you know, a set package, did you work with somebody like that to help you walk through the steps?
I've had a lot of different mentors over time. Some were coaches, some I've joined masterminds. Ultimately, the biggest influence in my business building was my dad. My dad was the CEO of two global manufacturing enterprises and like on the biggest scale, so not small business side, but he helped me a ton. He helped me create my first business plan and run through what I should be offering and charging and making sure that I knew how to read a P&L. And then the next big investment I did was into bookkeeping and taxes because I had no idea what I was doing. And that was a huge waste of time, waste of energy, but also it allowed me to learn what expenses were draining me. What do I need to be focusing on? How am I categorizing? How much money do I need to be making? And the bookkeeper and ultimately the CPA that I hired was an educator as well. So over time, I've like accumulated mentors, but I would say like the biggest influence was definitely my dad. He really took me under his wing.
So let's talk about when you formalized, like after you got your first couple clients and you realized kind of the formula and you, how did you come up with what the formula is for your business for success and what that is?
Ultimately, a lot of it came back to learning from the past. And I worked on contract for a lot of different agencies on big campaigns as well. I worked for a lot of different places kind of all at once while I was running the agency, but it was on the books very successful. And so I knew what I loved about it and I knew the stability that I loved about it. I knew what worked in other businesses that I'd worked for. And so I took what I loved and then I looked at what I didn't love. What are the things that I hated about those businesses? How much time was I spending outside of work working? What was I doing that I really didn't enjoy doing? Who are the people that I really no longer wanted to work with? What are the industries that I just like don't want to touch? And I made it really clear what I wanted and didn't want it. And I made like a big picture kind of document that outlined exactly where I wanted my business to go. And I didn't worry so much on the how per se. As long as I was moving in the general direction of that ultimate goal, I knew I was on the right track. That's really it. Optimism and working in the right direction. That's it.
That's really smart. It's super smart. I love too that you talk about you're very, very anti the toxic hustle culture. And is that like a mentality that you bring to your clients or is that like your own personal mentality, like why you started your business? Talk to me
about
it.
Both, for sure. Anyone who works with me knows that working more, doing more, all that kind of excess that's unnecessary is not in the game. Like, that's just not in the plans. I'm not going to give you things that you're going to do on the weekends or in the evenings. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we have when we run a side hustle is thinking of it like a side hustle. It's not a side hustle, it's a startup. And you really need to think of it in that sense, because the goal isn't to keep it on the side. But when we keep referring to it as your side hustle, you're going to keep it on the side and you're going to hustle. And so when we think of it as a startup, it's got a different vibe to it, a different energy to it. So my clients know that that's my perspective. I don't want you to burn yourself to the ground. Why build the business that you have sitting on top of you and crushing you?
Right.
We all get into business for a reason. It's typically not to work more, to have less freedom, right?
Right.
We do it for a lifestyle, and that has to be a part of the plan for you. Otherwise, what's the point?
So you're saying even in your own business, like, working more doesn't pay off later on, is what you're saying?
No. Yeah. Do less, but do it better. You know, what I found too, learned the hard way, is we end up doing a lot of things, but mediocre. Like, it's a lot of movement, but it's not creating the progress you need. When you can hyper-focus on one to three things, typically one thing, and do it really well, you're going to create the momentum and the progress you need. And you're also naturally going to lose a bunch of fluff that you thought was urgent or important, but ended up not being.
I think that's really smart. I think a lot of people listening, especially moms and parents who are like forever multitasking, myself, I resonate with that, doing a lot of things not well. And I feel like my brain is in a lot of places, just kind of dipping into things, but not fully present. Are you recommending, and do you suggest, like, a solution to that? Like you said in the beginning of this interview, asking for help, like what you did, which is really getting people to, like, take some of those things you can delegate off your plate and giving yourself the chance to focus solely on something, even if it's for 30 minutes a day.
Sometimes you need to ask for help, and not necessarily in the, can you do this for me? But I need you to think for me. I need you to be looking for opportunities. I need you to come up with a solution for me. So one of the things I did for along the process was like, Mom, I don't have time to cook for my daughter, cook for myself, clean, do the dishes, take care of the house. Like, I need to find some space, but you live in a different country. Can you just, like, put your brain to this and start thinking of ideas for me? Because I'm exhausted and I can't do it. But, like, if you come up with any ideas that might save me time, like, write them down and send me an email. And honestly, she was like, hire a dog walker. And I was like, never thought of it.
Yeah.
Immediately. I was like, oh, $15? Like, yes, of course. Why did I not think of that? But it's true. Like, our mental capacity to solve problems decreases the more burnt out we are.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you got to leverage the brain power of other people. So that can be a way of asking for help. The other thing too, when you're looking at kind of ditching the hustle when you're overworked and burnt out and whatnot, is prioritizing. I think there's a great analogy that I heard, and I can't remember who said it. I feel terrible. We're all juggling a lot of stuff. And one of the biggest keys is understanding which balls are glass and which balls are rubber. My house can be dirty, but I need to put food on the table for my daughter, and I need to be okay. I need to pay my bills, right? Like, and so it's understanding that certain things just are no longer really urgent or even important, and letting those go, not tying your worth or your identity to getting everything done, because that serves no one. And on top of that, a lot of us use busy as a coping mechanism to not deal with the things that we probably should be dealing with. But the truth is, doing nothing but letting your brain think and be creative about problem solving is better than filling your time doing a whole bunch of other stuff that's not helping you and then never solving the problem. So sometimes it just means, like, taking a shot to the ego and looking the problem in the face and saying, okay, how do I get new clients? I need to dedicate 2 hours of just sitting here and thinking and focusing on that instead of, okay, I'm going to clean, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to think about my clients. No, do the revenue generating important stuff first. Prioritize that right first thing, so none of the other distractions get in the way, because they can all just wait. Getting new clients can't.
I feel like you're too young to have all this figured out so well. You're like, I've got it down. I mean, it would be one thing if you were 65 being like, you know, looking back, but you're way too young to have this all figured out. I mean, even though in theory, I understand all this stuff, I'm still hot mess express over here, but I think that will resonate a lot with the people listening. So I appreciate all of that. And I think it makes so much sense. So going back to your business and just, you know, you do marketing for other businesses, but let's talk about how you marketed for your own business. I'm just curious also to know how many clients you can take on at once, like how many you have in your portfolio, like at one time.
For sure. So one of the things I know as a marketer is the marketing for small and micro businesses is very different than small, medium enterprises and large businesses. We don't have ad spend budgets and we can't compete with them. And so focusing on paid ad, fighting algorithms, putting time and energy towards those things is really just a waste. So what I always recommend is start with the old-fashioned way of offline marketing. How do marketing agencies grow? The secret is they grow through public speaking and networking. That is how they grow and get their big clients. And that's how you can grow too. And so owning your voice, talking regularly about what you do, showing up with your camera on and mic on to Zoom meetings. A lot of us pay for masterminds and networking groups and things and then never actually show up, engage. What a waste. Show up. You're going to meet people. You're going to solve problems for people and get out there and talk to real people. If the internet didn't exist, what would you do to get clients? Do that first. That is absolutely the way to go because none of the other stuff is guaranteed. And it may also be a huge time suck that you don't necessarily need. If you price yourself well, if you do a great job and you deliver 10x the value you promise, you can charge premium prices. And the goal isn't to take on more clients per se. Like for myself, I don't have hundreds of clients.
Like how many clients would you say you have?
11. I have some that are in a group program. I have some that are in one-on-one and then I have some project based. And my goal isn't to get more. My goal is to just keep them forever and get them to keep buying more, right? It's easier and cheaper to keep the clients you have and get them to spend more than it is to find new clients.
Right.
And that's the truth of it. So how can you get them to spend more at every transaction? What are natural ways that you can just increase revenue from the people who already love you and keep them forever? It's that simple. And it sounds simple. Simple doesn't mean easy.
So with those, you're not doing like web ads, social media. Is it really, you've got your clients, you have your 11 clients. I'm assuming you get a lot of referrals. If you get new clients, it's referral based. Is that the majority of
the majority of my clients are referral based. One of the things that I've been doing over the past year, I've made partnerships with some local small business associations and kind of growth incubators here. And so I do consulting for them and I teach free workshops for them. And naturally, I just help a lot of people. The goal isn't necessarily to get more clients. It's just to deliver great value. And if they do come to me, amazing. But it's really like, how can I just elevate the level of businesses around me and bring them up? And that naturally will grow my business. I don't need to know how it happens. I just know it does. It always does. I do lots of free stuff. So free webinars, free Ask Me Anythings. I bring in friends and experts from my network to share and solve problems for people. And just by doing so naturally, people just gravitate towards me and want to work with me.
So how many clients did you have before the leap from being able to leave your full-time job to going full-time with your side hustle and kind of like what that looked like and how you knew you were able to do that?
So I thought about it kind of backwards compared to most people. Most people think, okay, I need to have this many clients and this much revenue from my side hustle before I ditch my other business. I thought about it the complete opposite. How much money am I missing out on by holding onto this business, by holding onto this job, by not focusing more on my business? And I got to that point where the bottleneck was my time and capacity. And it just made sense. It wasn't a revenue driven thing. That was it. It was okay. Yes, I need to make money, but also I can't make money unless I invest the time and energy. And I knew I needed one or two more clients to really be stable. And if I had more time, I could get those two clients. I was fully confident that I could do it. I had a little bit in the bank to save for a month or two. So I gave myself a time frame. Okay, I've got 6 weeks. I'm going to quit my other job. I'm going to get those two clients. And that's it. And I hyper-focused on the kind of clients I want, what I wanted to sell them, how I wanted to sell packages with them. And I went full force into relationship building mode and connecting mode and said, I need two clients. I told all of my clients, hey, look, I'm looking for two more people to add to my roster. Do you know anyone who would be a great fit?
That's awesome.
And within 3 weeks, I had those two clients.
That's awesome. So, okay, tell me about what you're offering people initially, like what are people signing on for and how you transition them to stay as like lifetime clients? What are those packages?
So one of the things I advocate for is have your menu, your public offerings, the things that everyone knows about, but also keep a couple off the menu. Because naturally, there will be great opportunities that come up that don't fit precisely in those packages. And that doesn't mean you have to say no. If they align with your values, if it's something that's going to be fun and energizing and build your and be good for you, why not make an exception? And so I do have a couple clients that are off the menu.
Right. What are the things that are on the menu that you offer?
Yeah, so I have a group coaching program for small businesses, micro businesses making under $300,000 per year. So it's weekly coaching. They learn my quarterly growth framework. So there's an online course portion, weekly coaching to work through it. And that's just an ongoing membership program. They can come in, they can leave whenever they want, but most people don't leave. And that's it. So that's the group coaching program. I have a one-on-one kind of hybrid program for businesses in the middle who are under about 500,000 and they're looking to add on team members and scale. And then I have a larger package, which is a retainer package, where I basically work as a marketing director for a company. So I come in on a fractional basis. I train and manage your team. I outsource and delegate and take control of the whole marketing for your business. So those are kind of the three progressions based on where you are in your business.
Wow. So if you're working, like in terms of having 11 clients and splitting that up, I mean, being like even a marketing director, even you're not like on staff, but acting in that position, that's a considerable amount of time to understand the business, like get to know their needs. How do you split up your time between all those clients? And like, do you just understand like what you can handle and then or do you have staff as well?
No, it's just me. Okay. It's just me. And that's something that I've done intentionally. My packages are really clear on the time that you get from me. And so I'm not accessible all the time to anyone. Right. So for the one-on-ones, for example, you're either getting 2 or 3 calls per month. There are designated check-ins, designated ways to communicate, and it's all very standardized because that's the only way. And in the consulting role, like I'm not necessarily the doer. I'm telling you what needs to be done. I'm helping you figure out what needs to be done, but you're going out and doing it, or your team is executing. And then the group coaching, it's just the weekly calls. So it's really not too bad. I think the key is knowing your number, knowing where you can take on people. And I know when projects are ending, when people are leaving or moving on. Some of my clients are on a project basis that are ending. Some are on much smaller kind of ongoing packages just based on the nature. So it depends. But I don't ever feel bottlenecked by time. And if mm-hmm. I do, I know it's time to increase my prices.
Interesting. That's really fascinating because I feel like you're the only person that's offering the services and like how you divide your time. But that's really good to know. So keeping people on long term, like for these businesses, you're helping consult and hire people. Are they ever looking to hire an in-house marketing director that would then replace like what you're offering? Is that
not usually
does that happen? No,
not usually. It has happened before, but that was a unique, they were in a different country and it made more sense. But most of the time having a fractional director of marketing, so somebody outside consulting, is infinitely cheaper than hiring an employee to do it. And also the pool of consultants on a fractional basis is just higher quality. It's better. There are better, more equipped people that can come in and help you from the outside than it is to hire, because then you've got salary, you've got benefits, you've got sick days and vacation days. There's so many other pieces when you're hiring an employee versus taking on someone for a fractional basis. Right? So it's a very different ballgame. So most people don't. They may, if they're, say, for example, all of a sudden they got a whole bunch of funding and are moving public or got venture capital funding, and then it makes sense for them to board decisions, you know, that happens. But for the most part, no, most of my clients stay and they just progress into a different bucket. Their needs might change slightly, but for the most part, there's no reason for them to leave because the packages evolve based on their needs and continue to solve problems for them and serve them.
And so listening to all this, you know, I know we touched a little bit on, obviously, there are some things along the way that weren't as easy as they sound. But is there anything that sticks out in your head as like one of the biggest obstacles you had to overcome in transitioning and making this your full-time job and whatever that was and just getting over that obstacle?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, there's actually a book that really just completely transformed my life and my business. So that's The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. Okay. Phenomenal book. What I found was I was self-sabotaging a lot, unconsciously and consciously. So I'd hit a new level of success. I'd get a new client. Something great would happen. And then all of a sudden, oh my goodness, I'd lose clients, or my daughter would get sick, or something would happen around the house, or our roof flooded or something, right? Like there was always just something would come up and all of a sudden I'd be right back where I started. And it was a pattern that I noticed repeating over and over and over again. And I was frustrated and burnt out and just exhausted. And I could not figure out why, for the life of me, I just couldn't get a break. Right. I'm sure many people can resonate with that. And a mentor of mine nudged me and said, I think you need to read this book. And I was like, I don't think a book is going to help me. I think I need the universe to just start listening. And he was like, no, read the book. And so I read the book. And ultimately what I found out was, yes, I absolutely was self-sabotaging. What I found was I really didn't believe that I was worthy of success. I really didn't. I thought I needed to have the degree. I needed to have the big paying job. I needed, like, there were so many prerequisites to what would make me worthy of having a successful business. And cognitively, I knew that wasn't true. I knew that that wasn't real, but internally I fully believed it and embodied it. And it just came out in my life. And ultimately I had to really face that kind of moment of, why do I really inside myself and my heart and my soul believe that I'm not worthy of these things, and really face it and come up with real answers and then move forward knowing and really embodying that, no, regardless of what's going on or what I've done or who I am or who I think I am, I'm worthy of this working out, and I have to have faith and believe that I'm worthy in that. And the second I started really feeling that in myself, magically, all of these annoyances and things just started working themselves out. It felt very magical, and it sounds kind of woo, but it really was basically me finding ways to make things harder than they needed to be because I really didn't believe that I was worthy.
I love that. I got like chills listening to you say that, because I think there's so many people who think that. I think there's a lot of women who think that subconsciously and don't realize that. Again, I think you're wise beyond your years to have figured this all out. I do think that's a really powerful self-realization on your part, that a lot of people get in their own way of like reaching their own success because there are a million things that could set you back. And so I think that's a really great message. And it sounds like everybody should read The Big Leap. So thank you for telling us about that. Well, leading into kind of talking about success for your business, then it leads me into what do you see for Mickey Anderson and your business in the next like couple years? Where would you like to see it go?
So my personal goal is to double my business in the next 3 years. And that's kind of a typical business growth goal for existing businesses over that like 3 to 5 year mark. Most of us are looking for that kind of steady growth. So that's kind of where I'm at. I will be hiring on additional support in my business, and more so in terms of bringing on coaches and consultants to train with me and to coach with me. I feel like I've got the systems and everything really set up. And so I'm excited to bring on people to start training my frameworks and working with me in that capacity. So that'll be in the next probably year and a half. And ultimately, it's really like that group coaching program. I'm so pumped. It's incredible and delivers such great results. And so that's really my focus. This program delivers the results. It gives them what they need to scale without that ridiculously high for them one-on-one consulting package cost, as well as the time cost that they would be spending trying to DIY everything themselves. So that's really my big focus right now.
That's great. Are you doing a lot of, I meant to ask, are you doing like now back to in-person stuff, or did you never do in-person? Is it mostly Zoom?
I've been mostly virtual, to be honest. I do some in-person speaking and some like masterminds or group events. But for the most part, I do everything virtual. Just the nature of my life with my daughter and my husband and everything kind of being up in the air all the time, as well as just the volume of stuff that I need to get done. Like, I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then lastly, just kind of wrapping up, what would you say, and you've given so many great tips along the way, so don't feel like, but do you have any tips or advice for people who are looking to start a side hustle that's similar to yours or in coaching and consulting that you could offer?
It's these two things. The first is stop worrying about social media and your website and your marketing, and worry about the relationships. If you're avoiding talking to past clients, bite the bullet. Send them a message. Let them know you're thinking of them. Send them a resource or an article or something that just you think they would find helpful, right? Reach out to them on a regular basis. You're not annoying. You care. There's a difference. So build those relationships. Talk to real people. Don't be afraid to ask for help, for connections, for clients. Talk to real people and focus on that. And then the other side is stop thinking of it like a side hustle, because it's not. It's a startup that happens to be on the side while you happen to be hustling. But that's not the goal. The goal is to have a real viable business that is your focus. So start talking about it with the language and energy of a startup. You will notice a difference.
So good. It was such a pleasure. So finally, lastly, just tell everybody where they can find you, all the, you know, online, any social media places you are. Let us know where.
Yeah,
where
you can find me at heymickeyanderson.com. You can also find my free content planning playbook. So I built out for anyone who's struggling to create content online, wasting time, or just not doing it. I created a step-by-step playbook to help you build out 6 pieces of core content and then turn it into like 30 plus pieces of content. So you don't have to worry about creating content that actually gets you clients. This will help you do that. So you can get that for free on my website at Hey Mickey Anderson, pretty much everywhere on social media. And my YouTube channel as well is Hey Mickey Anderson.
That's awesome. I love that you have that as your business, the Hey Mickey Anderson. I think that's very cool. Well, thank you so much. I mean, it was such a pleasure.